Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up, everybody, and burn down, burn down the system. Fails the exit pool. Wake up the silence.
Welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 59. So, you know, we got quite a few shows racked up there. Not bad, not bad. And we're here with my co-host, Michael West. This is Steven Zimmer. We're ready to take you on a journey down a dark fiction path tonight. So we're going to get into that in just a little bit with a rather chaotic guest that we have on deck. But you'll know the reference shortly. First of all, yeah, this was good to be back. It's last show was, of course, hosted by Sayla and Alex with the great artist Courtney Weiss. But good to be back with you, Michael. Long time no see. It's been almost 3 days since we went troll pubbing.
Yes. good times.
But, yeah, what I'm referring to is, of course, the infamous troll pub in Louisville, Kentucky. And, of course, that's a traditional spot for us authors when we do Louisville events, and Michael and I were at the Fright Night Horror Weekend, and so I was there 3 days, and then Michael, I guess Ken could only come up with enough of the budget to get you down for 1 day with your guest speaking fee and everything else.
It's October. It's my busy month.
Well, this is your pinnacle month, though, with the Halloween holiday, of course, you know. But
yes,
I know that's a big thing in the West world. There's a good science fiction reference there. But anyway, wanted to just ask you about your day and you, like I said, I know a little bit about what's going on with you lately, but for your readers and such, tell us about your trip to Louisville and anything else going on.
Oh, okay. Well, it was, as you said, it was a Fright Night Film Fest Horror Weekend, and it was a weekend full of independent horror filmmakers and actors and writers and special effects people. It was just Ken and Mira Daniels always throw an awesome show, and it was a lot of fun. Got to be on several panels with L. Andrew Cooper and other authors, and discussed the art or the craft of creepy, as we'd like to call it over the weekend. But had some awesome panel discussions, and got to chat face to face with some new and faithful readers, which is always the best part of these convention get-togethers. And it's just a really good time.
Then, of course, you know, the troll pub and excursion, but, it's always a pet apex of any weekend.
It's always the best part of the day after the long day on the convention floor is to kick back and relax under a bridge with fellow horror authors. And
troll.
A big troll.
Yeah, and now that you got me started on a chicken and waffle sandwich, that heritage has passed on to our newcomers to the troll pub, Missy Goodman and Glenn Porzig and all. And so I don't think Amy got it, but we actually overwhelmed their waffle iron that night. So yeah,
I know they told us after we all, you know, you got like half a dozen writers there. We all ordered chicken and waffles. And then the waiter comes to tell us that they only have one waffle iron, so it's going to be a wait.
Well, I think if more people knew about that sandwich, they'd probably need to make at least buy a couple more irons, because that thing is amazing. It's like a sandwich with absolutely wonderful waffles that on any other day would be great by themselves for breakfast.
Right.
But yeah, they have
like Belgian style.
Yeah. Yeah. And the epic sandwich, and then of course the sweet potato tater tots always add a nice touch to that dish. But
I actually got an added surprise because I had seen it on some other dishes and I wanted to try them, but I had asked for the fried Tabasco onion strings, and I said, can I get those? And he's like, yeah. And so I thought I was getting those instead of the sweet potato tater tots. But in fact, when he brought it out, I had both.
Well done, Michael. You know how to work them for bonuses. That's well done. Yeah, we had a blast there. And Robin Blankenship was with us too. And James and Andrew. And we had a nice little group down there. And Amy McCorkle, it's her first time. And of course, Glenn and Amy and of course, you already mentioned Andrew. We also had Gary Razor, and we also had Pamela Turner, and Mr. Mandragora was with us. And we had, as far as like the panels that we had on Saturday, and I actually thought the content of those was awesome. I mean, we had one that was just like deeply historical about about the icons of horror, a little bit of a focus on those who have passed on this past year, like Christopher Lee. And then the second one, like I said, was a craft of creepy, so more of a craft panel. And but I thought I was definitely engrossed in the content, because I mean those were like some good discussions.
I was very happy with the contributions of all the panelists. It was really, really interesting discussion, and I love the panels where one person just kind of feeds into something that the other person wants to say, or brings up something that gets the other people going or gets the audience going. We had a lot of audience participation, especially in the first panel.
Yeah, we did. We definitely did. I mean, that's always cool. And that always helps panelists, by the way, when the audience gets more engaged.
It
helps you figure out, who wants to know about what and all that kind of thing. So that definitely helps.
And I would be remiss if I did not bring up the fact that, as you said, this is my busy time of the year, but I would be remiss if I did not bring up the fact that my Halloween-themed novel, Spook House, which just went over 70 reviews on Amazon.com, is a best-selling novel on Kobo and other formats, is for this month of Halloween on sale for 99 cents, just 99 cents for the Kindle, Nook, Kobo, and what else? All iTunes, iBooks, all the digital formats.
Spook House is your Michael West gateway drug. That's the one you can get on the bargain and get hooked on and addicted to Michael West's prose. So that's the gateway drug. It's a great book. And of course, you like that, you can go right to The Wide Game and Cinema of Shadows, right in the same, same kind of world of your horror. And then, of course, go over to your Legacy of the God stuff with Poseidon's Children and Hades' Disciples and your short story collections. And, it's definitely a good place to start the journey, though.
Right, because that's actually my only book that features characters from both the Harmony, Indiana novels and the Legacy of the Gods. So it's
very cool.
You can branch off either way.
Well, I know it's going to shock you, but I actually have news myself, believe it or not. Next week, Hellscapes 2 is out, and it's my follow-up. So I actually do have a horror title coming out this month, and it's my time to get to enjoy my horror side of my world. And that's going to be, this time I've got six tales set in hell, various visions of hell. That's the Hellscapes title reference. And going to be doing a blog tour to support that. And then we never actually got to do a blog tour for Heart of a Lion, so I got that coming up the week right after it. and we're doing a contest. It's going to kind of bridge myself. I'm just myself sponsoring it, but I'm going to do a Kindle Fire HD 7 and a bunch of other prizes, but kind of a contest to span both tours. That's going to kind of commence next week. So, yeah, I'm actually going to be finally getting to get out there and play a little bit in the blogosphere. And so hopefully everybody will like the posts and the interviews and all that good stuff. But I'm kind of excited about, actually having some writing stuff coming out, because, like I said, it's been since last February, I guess, since Heart of the Lion came out.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I just want to say to my readers, I do get your messages, I do get your emails, I do get your tweets, and yes, I know you're anxious, but I can assure you that new stuff will be out as soon as possible. But I've been hearing back from my pre-readers, and I'm not a good judge of my own stuff, but based on what they're telling me, I think it'll be worth the wait for you.
Well, and now that we know that a mutual friend of ours, who I went to high school with, Tom Spaulding, evidently knows you, so I've got another person that I can use to spy on you and nudge you now. So yeah, he's a writer up there in Indy, but turned out that he knew Michael West, and when he had this revelation, he was kind of excited about it. Yeah, when he made the connection.
Yeah, I always love it when people tap me on the shoulder and say, "Are you Michael West?" I'm like, yeah.
Not sure whether to admit it or not.
Yeah. It's like, who are you, and do you have a knife? You know. But
like my friend Jerry Williams. That's right, Jerry Williams,
the
filmmaker. He's actually in. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, the next words out of his mouth after "Are you Michael West?" and I said yes was, "I know Steven Zimmer."
Oh my God, that's awesome. That's awesome. But
so it's like I'm not dangerous. I know Steven.
Oh God, that's too funny. But it's like my friend Jerry Williams, a filmmaker. He was there at the weekend, but he actually had a reviewer that said that he wanted to punch him in the face over his movie on a public review. And so yeah. Sometimes you don't know for sure whether you want to admit who you are or not. That was one of the funniest film reviews I've ever read. But Jerry's a funny guy. He's got a great sense of humor. But yeah, we're looking forward to a whole lot coming right down the pike here. And tonight, actually, we have a great guest coming in with us. He's been, of course, at Imaginarium, and I've seen him at many other conventions here. He is the wielder of the Pen of Chaos, as I have named him, because his Twitter handle is Pen of Chaos, and his short story collection of Pieces of Chaos, and he's also the author of Poisonous, and has numerous short fiction pieces in a number of magazines and all kinds of stuff, and he has great taste in music as well, which I know Michael will be glad to know, and we might get him to talk about his musical side a little bit. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Tommy B. Smith to the Star Chamber Show for your first visit. Welcome aboard, Tommy.
Hello. Thank you for the warm welcome. Good to be on the show finally. I've listened to a few of these in the past, but I haven't listened to as many of them as I would possibly like, but thought I should probably show up for this one. So.
Well, you just heard the crowd cheer in the background there. Yeah, they're all excited.
Was that
the in-studio crowd? Well, that was the in-studio crowd.
The enthusiasm always helps.
Yeah, that was the in-studio crowd that we have in our Star Chamber Show studios, which are state-of-the-art, of course. But we are personally very excited to have you here with us, because you are along our lines in many dimensions. You're a dark fiction guy, you're a music guy with, let me add, that taste in the best kind of music, and then of course personality wise, I think you're one of the coolest guys I've met on the circuit, for your first appearance on the show, tell us a little bit about your style of fiction, and then you can talk a little bit about your novel and what Pieces of Chaos is about, your short story collection.
All right. Well, I tell people most of the time that I write dark fiction, which just indicates that a lot of the themes that weave themselves into my work are a bit darker and heavier in theme. Basically, I write whatever I want to. Now, quite a bit of that is horror, not all of it. I do a bit of fantasy, but mostly up to this point, it's been short stories that I've done, fantasy-wise, and Dead Poisonous, which is full-head horror, and that, I suppose, gained me a bit more recognition in the horror genre. So I seem to have been, people seem to know me better for the horror, obviously, by this point. And then the story collection, Pieces of Chaos, that one is mostly horror-focused. So, I suppose that's the majority of what I've done has been horror. As far as the style,
like in your bio, you've got a lot of publications listed and things like that. How many writing credits do you know? Like total, because I mean you got quite a few places listed.
I think I had. I know it was between 30 and 40 before I had Poisonous come out, I believe, somewhere along those lines. And that's sort of how I started, is sending out a lot of short stories and the like to different magazines and anthologies. And then, of course, I worked as an editor with Morpheus Tales magazine, and that helped out quite a bit, I think. Gave me a different perspective. I think that's helpful to a writer to be a slush reader or take some sort of editorial job to give you a view from the other side of the desk and read the work of others as well.
Well, I don't personally have a publication out as an editor, but I know that Michael does. And so, yeah, I know you two could probably talk a little bit about the editor side of things because I was going to bring that up for sure. And, yeah, and then you also, you have in the great Karen Coyne Press State of Horror series, you've got something out there, too. So I want to give a shout-out to Jerry Benz, of course, the head of that. They just had a brand-new release as of yesterday. Yeah, you've got something out with those guys, too.
Definitely. That was a story, Stealing Sight, that appeared in the State of Horror, Louisiana, Volume 1 anthology. And excellent book, and not because I'm in it necessarily, but excellent stories all around. And we actually all had the opportunity to read some of that material at Imaginarium, so that was a pleasure. And then they just released Paying the Ferryman. They just had the launch yesterday, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it sounded like a very interesting premise, so I was interested in checking that one out as well. Excellent cover art, definitely. I've seen that so far of it.
So you mentioned... go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you mentioned the Morpheus Tales. I know that you were the editor on their Dark Sorcery and Urban Horror special issues. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that, since that's two areas that are near and dear to my heart. So many people ask me, what do you consider, urban fantasy or urban horror? And, what makes fantasy, dark fantasy, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yes, the Dark Sorcery, when we did that issue, that was sort of a blend of occult horror, and then we had some pieces that were more fantasy, and I wanted it to be more of a blend, blurring the line between the two when at all possible, and bring some cohesion to the issue, I suppose, and there was a lot of good material that came in for that issue. And so, obviously, you can't accept everything, but we went with what worked best for that issue. And there were a lot of there were some really action-packed fiction. There were some that was more atmospheric, I suppose, but sort of a blend. But the issue turned out really well. A lot of people thought. So that was a pleasure to work on. And then the urban horror issue was more, of course, full-head horror and not as much of a blend, but we had a lot of very excellent material for that one as well. And that's been a few years ago by now, but I know the dark sorcery issue is one that I still hear about, and we had some authors who are a part of that who have actually gone on to do some pretty phenomenal things. We had Dennis McDonald, and who's written Ebon Moon and bounces around a lot of the conventions on the Oklahoma scene, and Aaron Goodmunson, who's written some novels by this point, and who I met out at a World Horror Convention a couple of years ago, and a lot of other very talented authors.
Yeah, that's one thing I love about anthologies and magazines is discovering people who I may not have heard of before.
Definitely. And it can open it can open a doorway. You just never know what form of talent you may discover. And I've referred to that as or some of these stories you discover, which you may not have had the opportunity to read otherwise. Sometimes black diamonds, things that people don't always notice, but discovering that talent and ability and creativity.
No, that's very cool. And then, of course, Mr. West is sitting over there with an anthology where he got to have Tim Wagner and Gary Brownback and Lucy Snyder.
Mm.
Yes.
I'm fortunate enough to know where the bodies are buried for many talented writers.
Well, we gave Tim a bottle of Basil Hayden, so hopefully, hopefully he'll be kind to us in the future. Instead of mentioning him, but truthfully was though. I mean, actually, in that collection, the other ones that have gotten so many kudos and reviews is actually the R.J. Sullivan story. And he's, of course, we love him at Seven Star Press, but he's not as known as Tim Wagner, Gary Brownback, and those guys, and Lucy and all, but sometimes within like a big anthology, you'll have the ones that maybe aren't known emerge out of it, just like you were saying, diamonds in the rough.
Well, there's a cool author named Steven Zimmer in that collection also.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to mention that, but. But I thought RJ's robot vampire one was pretty awesome. I thought that story is pretty great.
Yeah,
and,
well, it helps. I don't know if you've had this experience, Tommy, when you've been editing, but some people tend to find out what you like, and then submit something that plays to that. RJ knows that I'm a huge fan of Asian stories, Asian horror, and tropes, and submitted a story about an Asian vampire who possesses a robot pop star.
I already got my Tommy B. Smith game plan. I'm going to have a story with hundreds and hundreds of heavy metal band references when Tommy does his next project as an editor.
Yeah, that would probably help you out.
I got it. That's a shoo-in. I got that figured out.
Well, so. You definitely won't be the last in line with that.
No. Yeah, that Tommy actually is funny because actually you mentioned Oklahoma, and I went down to Tulsa for the Phantom Fest there,
and
Tommy
I completely
was off
you.
rocking at Rocklahoma, and I came down to the convention center, and I completely missed me. I was like, no,
I did drop by, but I never could find you there. But it was it was enjoyable checking out the show because I hadn't been to that one before. But yeah, and then alternating with Rocklahoma, going back up there catching the bands, and we almost got buried in a mudslide and a flood and all kinds of wonderful tornadic activity, whatever that was that came down on us. And we managed to escape intact, barely. But so that was interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you for all the chaos you unleashed because I had to drive back and the 11-hour drive took 13 hours to come back because it didn't stop until I got to Lexington. So the pet of chaos has been at it again. He's unleashing a storm after getting excited at Oklahoma.
That was me.
But Oh, my God. But I was going to ask you, though, you know, when you come aboard a Jerry Benz anthology for State of Horror, do you get a discount when the ferryman takes you across the River Styx, or do you have to pay Karen the same rate as the rest of us, you know, when we cross to the hereafter? Do you get a discount if you become an accepted author on your River Styx crossings, or what?
Well, let's see. I only had the one coin, so I didn't have change. So, well, discount or not.
Oh, we got to give you a little bit of State of Horror trouble there. But you mentioned music a bit, so and I want to delicately bring this up because I don't know if you totally want to talk about it, but you do have a musical background and stuff, and kind of like to maybe bring that up a little bit for some of the fans.
Sure, we can do that. It's actually been a while since I've been on that scene, but I would say that was from the late 90s up till the early 2000s, double zeros, whatever we want to call that at this point. But when that all sort of came unraveled and fell apart. But it was in a couple of musical projects, a couple of bands at the time, and vocalist of both of those. And so the first one we had, we did a very small amount of original material, and we did a few covers. And of course, you know, Judas Priest, The Ripper, that was one that we did. And then we had a metal version of Tainted Love, and we did things like that. And then that came apart, and I became involved in another one, which is actually quite a bit more promising than that, as we had more original material, and I felt there was a lot more creative energy. So it was headed in the right direction, but at some point along the way, derailed. And but we had a four-song demo and some what could be some interesting trivia for any of the readers out there who may have read Pieces of Chaos. The story Mechanized actually originally began as a song back in that time period. There was a song, Mechanized, that was on the four-song demo. So some of the lyrics from that song actually made it into the story. I believe there was a In these halls, machines are born, designed to think and work great tasks, I believe was the line. And that actually made it into the story.
Awesome. So someday when you make it huge, you can put those demos out on 180-gram vinyl. And
Perhaps I'll have to dig out the old tape from these boxes in the garage. But I think it's somewhere out there, probably.
We really do have to at some point, yeah, we get up and jam at an Imaginarium now that we have a rock show on Friday nights and get Michael West up there, because actually Michael and I and Andrew Cooper and James and Jenny Nicole have been accused of having a band down at the Troll Pub before. So we're going to have to back
that up.
Well,
that's a very serious allegation. Now you're going to have to play.
Yes. So yeah, we'll have to do something about that. But you listen to music when you write, and I don't think I've ever asked you that.
Sometimes I do, but I always find that it seems to fade into the background, so I forget what I was listening to, or not forget altogether. But I'm not really paying that much attention somehow. I tend to become very focused when I'm listening to the music in itself. I tend to become very lost in the music, and if you're a serious fan of music, I know you understand that, and a music addict somewhat, but then when I'm writing, I become very focused on the writing and that aspect of the creativity, and then by the time the full album or whatever it is finished, then I have no idea what I've even just listened to. So I find that it doesn't really matter either way whether I listen to music or not if I'm writing, but
I use it as a bubble that blocks out, like kind of like the outside world. It kind of forms a sonic bubble around me, and that's the best way to describe it. Where I don't focus on it, but it definitely forms a nice background that kind of keeps a constant going. But But I love the fact that you have a music background and definitely don't mind the fact that you and I can talk about the new Queensryche album and things like that.
Oh yeah,
we know we share taste, and Michael, of course, is also one of us, and of course, yeah, he's always cranking up Disturbed quite a bit over there in Indianapolis.
Yeah. Well, my short story collection, Straitjacket Memories, of course, is from a Queensryche lyric.
That's awesome. That is so cool.
Right.
Straitjacket Memories and Chemical Highs.
Yeah.
Right. Eyes of a Stranger.
Operation Mindcrime.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The good stuff. See, I know my
Oh,
name.
Yeah.
Do I look prized for that? That's not bad.
More fried pickles at the next Troll Club meeting.
I just want to complete Tommy B. Smith story collection. Yeah, all right. Cool.
Yeah, I remember heading off to the Troll Pub as I was preparing to leave. I didn't actually have the chance to join everyone. Maybe we can remedy that next time. But we did get to have classic conversations that I've had with so many of my other friends when I go to a concert and we just say what back and forth for 5 minutes. But that's in a way that's good because you can hear the music. So even if you can't hear one another.
I just did that recently at the Motley Crue and Alice Cooper concert. conversation back and forth.
Right.
Of course, nobody was talking during the drum solo. That was the most amazing, like, staging thing I've ever witnessed at a concert before. It was just unbelievable. Roller coaster drum solo over the entire arena with the 360-degree drum set. No, that was cool. We need to do something like that at Imaginarium and have Tommy, on some kind of rig going around in circles. That would be awesome. That would be fun. But I guess we can get back to some writing stuff. But tell us how your path developed. I mean, as far as you and, because you talked about, being in music in the late 90s and 2000s. So talk about your path to becoming a writer and how that evolved.
Well, that was always something that I came back to. I drifted in and out of over the years. And I think back years ago, even before the music, I was into writing really as far back as I was able to hold a writing instrument and scrawl words on paper. I was always interested in the creative aspect of that and what you can spin out of nothing and what you can form, what sort of portrait you can form from words. And but at some point along the way, and when I was very young, I wrote a lot of short stories and things of that nature. But later on, say in the 90s, before all of this with the music unfolded, I suppose I allowed a lot of people to discourage me at that time. And so I felt that I didn't have much of a chance, but I became involved in the music scene and so drifted away from the writing and into the music, into practicing the music. But then at some point, I returned to the writing, as I always seem to do, and said, well, I'm not exactly getting any younger, so if I wanted to do anything, and I should probably actively start pursuing it, and you don't have a chance in the world if you don't at least give it a shot. If you do nothing, nothing will happen. So started pushing that, and I had actually moved, and it was in the wake of quite a few changes. I started writing a lot of new short story material, and started trying to sell that to different markets. And eventually, it was around 2005, 2006, I think, that I actually started making some sales on that. And so finally sort of got my foot in the door as far as becoming an author. And did the short stories for a while. And the horror novella Poisonous that actually stemmed from a short story that was around 2007, that one was published, and that was Living Poison, and which is sort of a toxic force I suppose that's one way to describe it, but that revisits the concept of the living poison, and only tells its full story, I suppose, in Poisonous. And then, of course, Pieces of Chaos came out later on, collecting a lot of the old short story material that I had worked on. And, of course, I'm still doing that, still writing the short stories and working on a book-length material as well. So I don't, now that I've come this far, certainly don't plan on giving up on it anytime soon. And I know a lot more people know my work now than they ever did, so it seems like I'm doing something right.
Well, it's like that iconic moment at Mid-South Con when I met you at your table, you know, and that life-changing event that occurred that day, and of course, that's where I came to know you. And I do have a signed copy of Pieces of Chaos, I might add, in my library, proudly so. But I wanted to bring up something interesting that's kind of segue here off what you're saying. I noticed that, you know, you said you right now, you said book length, so I'm assuming novella, novel length project, and you do have one novella length project out there currently, but most of your material has been, you know, short format, short stories, things like that, and, you know, your collection and everything, and your magazines and whatnot. Is that by choice? Do you prefer writing short fiction, or is it just the way that kind of like you evolved with the way that, you know, the market was, or you know, what's the you know, is that a conscious choice to focus on short fiction, or what?
I think I'll keep writing short stories because it allows me to bounce between worlds and to focus my abilities on a variety of different projects rather than. But there are benefits, I think, to focusing on a longer work, becoming immersed in that as well. But I also I enjoy the variety of being able to write different stories, at writing one story one day and then 3 days later writing something completely different. But then, you know, they're always writing short stories outside of a longer work. So I am writing longer works, and I think with each effort, it seems to me, or say I wrote Poisonous, and the one I'm writing now is one story and is quite a bit longer than that, and possibly they'll become longer and longer as I continue to write new ones, but we'll see. I don't think it's really a conscious choice. I think just with Poisonous, that was all that was required to tell that story, and I wanted something to be a story that was lean and basically a small block of action. And, for instance, I was never a huge fan of books where I'm reading about a description of the protagonist's shoes for about 3 pages. So I tried to get away from that and push the angle that something is always happening whenever you're reading. So I think that resulted in Poisonous being a novella rather than a full-length novel.
So someday we can look forward to a novel by you that's going to make Clive Barker's Magica look like a tiny book by comparison. Is that correct?
Well, possibly, but I don't know. That would be a very long time for me to write that one.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Oh,
one never
man.
Knows.
You are full of surprises, Mr. Smith. But I wanted to bring up one of the traditional questions in interviews, but I think it is a good one because actually it's one I want to know about. Who are your influences as a writer? And, talk a little bit about that.
Well, they're really influences are pretty far-reaching. I've read all sorts of different authors, and it isn't always easy to pinpoint who precisely was an influence, but but I can name some. When I was younger, and I was talking about this at a panel at Imaginarium, actually, when I was younger, we had a large utility room that was just packed full of books, you know, numerous shelves, and back in those days, of course, we didn't have the internet, and we didn't walk around and look at our phones and things like that, because the phones didn't really do anything except make phone calls, so I would read quite a bit, and so there was and of the horror material that I read out there. Of course, there was some fantasy as well, you know, the Lord of the Rings and things such as that, which may sound strange to people claiming, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien as an influence, considering I don't write anything anything like what he wrote, but that was one. Those were some early books that had an effect on me. And then, of course, you know, there was some Stephen King out there, and there were some Alfred Hitchcock anthologies, and even some, you know, Pal Anderson, science fiction author, and what else? Some people may remember John Coyne. He was a horror author, more well-known back in the 80s than now. I don't think he does as much these days, but really quite a variety. And then, of course, I've come to enjoy a lot of other authors. Obviously, you mentioned Clive Barker earlier. You know, huge fan of Clive Barker's work. And I've got a lot of different books on my current bookshelf. And I've come to know quite a bit of different authors' works. So
you have a big TBR pile, so for sure. That's cool.
Yeah, I have that as well. Actually, two of them. And,
but I think your influence is actually... Oh, go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to say, I have bookshelves full of books that I always call my retirement books. So when I'm in my rocking chair on my porch someday, I'll get around to reading them.
Yeah, I've got stacks and stacks of stuff I need to read for sure. But I think though that Tommy, your list of influences is kind of cool because it kind of points out the kind of the thing that I think a lot of is good advice though. It's reading outside your genre and reading things and writers and works that are not necessarily in your genre. I think definitely helps, you know, you become more well-rounded and as a writer. And so I think, yeah, you were mentioning that, yeah, you may not write in the same kind of vein as J.R.R. Tolkien, but having that in your mix, though, you know, with the craft in there, you know, is definitely a plus. And I think that's
I think it might help to lend a fresh angle to your work rather than reading strictly the same sort of material that I write, because I don't want to find myself emulating someone to an excessive degree and rather than doing what I do. And also I draw from outside influences, which is just the experiences that I have and who I am, and there's a lot there.
Well, there certainly is. You're the pen of chaos.
Well, I think when you're a writer, I think you know, just about everything gets used at one point or another.
Definitely, I'm sure if you write long enough, it inevitably would.
No, definitely does. What other kind of things go into your inspirational factors? What fills out the Tommy B. Smith inspiration?
Well, you know, we were talking about, I thought just a minute ago, the music, and I did write a short story that was influenced by that, you know, that time of my life, and that was that was a short story, Bottled Rituals, and that was in the old Rimfire eBooks anthology, Heavy Metal Horror, and Armand Rosamilia was involved with that, and that was sort of how I first came to know him, but just different. Different parts of my life have influenced different stories and then different experiences. And I think it's helpful, you know, bouncing around to all of these shows as we do. And you can take in a variety of perspectives because we all come from a different place. And some people are very much a different place and have had very different experiences. And for me, that's interesting because you can really say, I was telling someone else at Imaginarium, sitting on some of these panels with authors who are, write quite a bit of different material than you do, or have come from a different angle, or have a different perspective in some fashion. You can learn quite a bit from some of these other authors and artists who have had experiences that vary greatly with yours. Pick up some interesting perspectives, some different views that may be something that you haven't considered in the past, but could be useful to you. So a lot can come from a conversation. And I know you know that. One minute you can have a casual conversation with someone, and a year down the line, you never know what that can become. Could become a story, could become a project, or could result in your knowing something you didn't know before that could greatly benefit you. You just so if nothing else, it's interesting just to see where others come from.
Well, our first casual conversation at Mid-SouthCon a couple of years ago has led to you being here tonight on the Star Chamber show. So there you go, just illustrating your principle there. Which you may or may not be thankful for. But at least you get to talk to Michael West, and that's a good enough bonus. But, you know, putting up with me is definitely enough of a chore. But, yeah, Michael West is cool. So, you know. But so what have you got in the horizon here, coming up here, as far as the next you have some definite things on the map? Because I know you mentioned some works in progress.
Yes, well, I've been working on the one, which is influenced by loss and cemeteries and the like. I've actually, the last time when I visited Louisville for the first Imaginarium show, there's a cemetery not far from there. We actually went out and took a number of pictures, and I've done that at a number of shows. Is a visit nearby cemetery, take a number of photos, and some people view that as being, might view it as being somewhat morbid, but really these are just monuments that others have created to the ones they love, and it's more of a monument and a remembrance. I don't really view anything morbid in that, so and it was sort of inspired by that, so it's a but, of course, naturally, there are some darker elements as well. You know, loss is something that everyone must come to deal with in time, over the course of their lifetime, so.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm an expert in that category, but, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Well, I've been to Crown Hill Cemetery in Indianapolis many times, and I get what you're saying there. Is that there are some just very unique monuments that that people have created, and in fact several of my author photos have been taken there at Crown Hill, but it's just a very very unique. I mean, James Whitcomb Riley is buried there, and some very unique statues and mausoleums and whatnot.
And there's a lot of history, and all of those people have stories that you may not know, but all of those losses more than likely have affected someone, and there's a history in the cemetery. There's a lot of history. So I thought there was quite a lot to write about, so that would be the focus of the next one. But, yes, and then I've actually got some photos up of when we went to New Orleans the last time in 2013 for a World Horror Convention, St. Louis Cemetery Number 1, which is, I've read, is considered to be the number one most haunted cemetery in the United States. And Marie Laveau, her crypt is there. So we took a lot of photos of that, and interesting visit.
So is that why paranormal activity surrounded you at Imaginarium? Or
because I carried it from New Orleans up to there. And
yeah, thank you. But it was all purged after Armand took everybody to White Castle, and the spirits got sick after Sliders.
Oh, yes.
That will purge many things from your body.
Oh. See, Tommy, I promised you it would get crazy. I promised you it would be unpredictable. I'm giving you your money's worth here. But oh,
so
my
do you
God.
Have any big Halloween plans coming up?
I don't. Ours probably will be somewhat spur of the moment. I don't think we've settled on anything definite yet, but we have about a week and a half to settle on something. So,
right.
We'll see.
You should go out and help Michael run his house.
Well, you just never know when I may randomly show up and randomly disappear afterward. So.
I was wondering who that person was hiding behind my bushes the other day. Yeah, it was Tommy B. Smith. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But if I know Michael, you go all out. Yeah, you do the whole shebang, don't you?
Yeah, I've kind of scaled back last couple of years just because of, number one, we've had really bad weather the last couple of years, but also after my oldest minion went off to school and took all of his friends with him, then my help kind of dwindled down to nothing. But
I miss them, those guys. Yeah, I always love seeing them at conventions and all. They need to graduate. Get back to it.
Until I make enough that I can afford to pay them, I'm probably going to have to to be on my own more than I care to be.
Hey, they owe you for life, dude. They owe you for their lives. Yeah,
I know. I know. But that doesn't pay their rent.
No. Well, hopefully next year, Imaginarium, you'll be on all cylinders because you have no conflicts that weekend, so I think you're going to be back. So we can bring the Pen of Chaos and Michael West together at the same place. It could be, it's going to be dangerous.
In October. Just the right
in
time
your favor
as well.
Yeah, that could be fun.
This is sounding more and more like, you know, Signs of the Apocalypse.
That is. That actually is getting very, very disturbing. Speaking of convention schedules, Tommy, what places are you planning to hit, and what places would you recommend to other writers that may be listening as far as for appearances? Because you are a guy that gets out there.
Well, we've got, this year I think I'm only doing one other, and that's one in Conway, Arkansas, and I'm actually on the Arkansas-Oklahoma border, which is why I do so many Oklahoma events. But, I'll be doing that one, and then I'm planning to go back to Mid-South Con, so if you're doing that one too, then I'll see you again there. Mid-South Con is always a good one. And then, Underground Monster Carnival in Oklahoma City. That's a seriously good time. It's only a one-day show, but there's really a lot of action packed into that one day. And I always have a good time there, and I always do well there. And then also SoonerCon in Oklahoma City. That's one I've done for the past number of years. That's a good show as well. River City Comic Expo. There are a number of authors there and artists there. It's not, of course, you know, the definition of Comic-Con today is a lot different from, I suppose, what it used to be. It's not strictly comics. There are all sorts of different things at that one. And that's becoming a very large show. They moved to a new venue this past year, or this year, actually, earlier this year. And so that's one in Arkansas. And, of course, I bounce out around the region. Obviously, I come up to Louisville for Imaginarium, so I'll be there again.
Yay!
and that's what's coming to mind for now.
Well, yeah, Michael, you ought to take note of that MonsterCon show, because that sounds like that one's right up your alley. That one that he was talking about, Oklahoma City.
It's
weird.
Definitely
worth checking out.
Yeah, I'll have to give that one a try. It's weird because it's like I do well at the horror shows for sure, but sometimes when I try to branch out, because I write the horror novels, but then I also write, of course, the urban fantasy and whatnot. When I try to branch out to more of the pop culture cons, the ones that have more of a sci-fi, fantasy, comic book kind of slant, I don't tend to do as well. So I don't. I hate not trying.
Well, you don't know until you do try, really. So
right.
I try to give it an initial shot and see what happens, and take it from there.
Yeah, and I'm not. I've been known to give a con, you know, a few years before I kind of, you know, back out of it just simply because, you know, everyone has an off year, and especially if I have a fun time at it, I'm more
right.
willing to give it a second shot than if I go and it's just a horrible experience, which thankfully haven't had too many of those. So,
no, most of mine have been good experiences. I can only think of one that wasn't, and that was 1 year. So it could have been that could have been an off year. There's no telling, but
right.
the majority of them are at least a good time. And then Underground Monster Carnival, as I mentioned, that's a horror steampunk focus. More than anything. However, there are a variety of different, you know, there are comics and such there as well. And they have a kind of a freak show, and they've had live music there in the past. And like I said, there's really a lot going on. So if you make it down that way, you should check that one out.
Very cool. Yeah, I've got a lot of readers that keep trying to get me to go to Texas Frightmare Weekend, which
okay.
I hear is,
oh, yeah.
you know, an amazing time, but it just, you know, if I fly out there, then I've got to ship my books, and if I drive, then I'm devoting quite a bit more time to it than I normally do.
Well, that one's
yeah,
become immensely popular. I would like to do that one as well, but I think it's completely booked up now, so.
Yeah, yeah, that's. I think they have a waiting list every year.
They do.
Well, Tommy and Michael, just turn your eyes toward Las Vegas for StokerCon in May, because there may be something happening there regarding us. But, just saying, just keep your eyes that peeled out in that direction. But yeah, that's a definitely a horror oriented event that's in the heart of Vegas. What could go wrong there?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, man. Now that would be apocalyptic, yeah, to bring you and Tommy and the gang into the heart of Las Vegas for a horror-focused writers' convention. Oh, boy.
I do recommend the Walking Dead slot machine, though, because I have won big on that several times.
That does not surprise me.
Well, it's so funny because it's like my wife and I, usually the way we do it, and of course we're not big gamblers, but usually the way we do it is we go in and we say, okay, we're going to spend this much, and like she gets her portion and I get my portion, and you know, whoever's up at the time, we usually take the winnings and we split it again so that we just, you know, keep going as long as we can. And of course I'm going to, you know, the Wheel of Fortune slots and some other slots and just, you know, not having much luck, and then I go to The Walking Dead, and, you know, I hit this huge jackpot, and she's like, you know, you might know that of all the machines in this place, The Walking Dead
nice.
Would be good to you.
That's why you got the big money clips all the time, but anyway, Tommy, you're coming up on a minute left on the show, so I want to make sure that you get out your places where people can find you, so like websites. Go for it.
All right. Well, I'm at my website, of course, which is TommyBSmith.com, and then I'm on Facebook at Facebook.com/author Tommy B. Smith, and then I'm on Twitter, as you know, as Pen of Chaos, and that's, of course, Goodreads as Tommy B. Smith as well. So that's me.
Well, thank you, Tommy. This is great to have you on the show. And, yeah, we got the next up actually on the show as of today, I guess we confirmed, is actually me. I'm going on the hot seat with Sayla and Alexander Brown for to talk a little Hellscapes, too. But thank you very much for coming tonight, Tommy. It's been great to have you. I've wanted to have you on the show for a while because I'm a great writer and love having you. So thank you for coming, Tommy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excellent to be on the show, finally.
Well, happy Halloween, everyone.
Happy Halloween, everyone. Yes, have a good night. See you November 4th for our next show. Bye-bye.